All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment. Master Commissioner Robert Mayer presiding.
Please be seated. The first case for argument this morning is number 2015-78, Groveport Madison Board of Education versus Franklin County Board of Revision. The appellant is the property owner, Mr. Smishek.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. I'm Stephen L. Smishek, attorney for appellant NSCO International Investments, LLC. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal, if I may, sir. This case is an unusual case because it's one that's not likely to be seen again before us in our careers. Factually, it was created by a series of errors committed by the Board of Revision, by the Board of Education, and ultimately by the Board of Tax Appeals. Nevertheless, this case still involves one fundamental notion, and that is that a party facing a liability in a litigation is entitled to actual notice of that litigation. As I said, that notion is beyond fundamental, and we would urge this court to find that the failure of the Board of Revision to give notice to this property owner, that a notice of appeal was filed with the Board of Tax Appeals, is an error that created a lack of jurisdiction, and that this matter should be remanded to the Board of Tax Appeals for it to give an opportunity to the parties to argue both the jurisdictional and the merit issues that still remain. The facts in this case are rather unusual, as I stated, and if I may, I'd like to just very quickly go through them with Your Honor. On March 31st, 2006, an entity known as Columbus Properties LP1, who then owned the property, filed an decrease complaint with the Board of Revision. A countercomplaint was filed by the Board of Education within the proper amount of time. On November 15, 2006, an entity known as Six Ventures purchased the property from Columbus Properties. And on January 18, 2007, the BOER held a hearing at which time Columbus Properties appeared with an attorney who represented both Six Ventures and Columbus Properties. On March 1, 2007, a decision was issued by the Board of Revision decreasing the value of the property. 30 days after that decision was issued, no notice was filed with the Board of Tax Appeals. The Board of Revision considered the matter closed and final and issued the refunds to the then owner. What we did not know at that time, Your Honor, was that the Board of Revision failed to certify the decision to counsel for the Board of Education in this case. It mistakenly sent it to the wrong counsel. That decision was not certified, and in fact has not been certified to this day. It remains outstanding. 2 years pass, and in 2009, NSCO purchases the property. It did so without the ability to know that anything was still pending in this matter. The BOR had declared this matter closed. It issued the refunds as far as everyone was concerned, public record. This matter was done and over with. Yet 2 years later, in 2011, the Board of Education finally asked the Board of Revision where its copy of the decision is, receives a fax, and files an appeal with the Board of Tax Appeals. Now, the Board of Tax Appeals ultimately looked at the jurisdictional issues, acknowledged that there may be a problem with the fact that the Board of Education filed based on a fax rather than a certified mailing of the decision, yet decided to go ahead and decide the case anyway. Notice was sent to the former property owners. No notice was received by NSCO, who then in 2014 suddenly received a tax bill for $112,000 and said, "What's going on here?" It was the first time it knew anything was going on, Your Honor.
The BTA certify a copy of its decision or transmit a copy of its decision to the tax mailing address of NSCO?
It sent it, Your Honor, to the escrow agent. And we would argue that there's a difference between the tax. The tax mailing address is simply a mailing address in this particular case for the payment of taxes. There's nothing in statute, there's nothing in case law that says that sending notice to the escrow agent would in any way constitute constructive notice to the property owner. Nor can we find anything that would make an escrow agent a statutory agent on behalf of a owner, or in any way legally liable to pass that notice on to an owner. What is required in these cases, and as this court ruled in cases such as Columbus Apartments and again in Lincoln Tavern, actual notice must be given to the property owner because the property owner is liable for the tax and is also put at risk of even losing the property should it not be able to pay those taxes when they come along.
But when you say actual notice has to be given, don't you mean statutorily, constitutionally sufficient notice? It's conceivable that it could be properly sent to a proper address and somehow ignored.
It is possible, but that was not done in this particular case. Okay. Now, I will tell you that there are two possible addresses that this could have gone to. NSCO, being a registered LLC with the Secretary of State, does have a statutory agent who is legally empowered to receive notice on behalf of the LLC. Had it the BTA taken a few minutes to find that, which I have to tell you in previous years it would have done, it could have sent it to that statutory agent and notice would have been satisfied. The other thing the BTA could have done with its decision is it could have sent it to the property address properly addressed to NSCO. Now, a copy of the decision did go to the property address, but it was addressed to Columbus Properties LP1. And as we know under federal law, specifically 18 U.S.C. Section 1702, notice it is illegal for someone to open mail address to another person. So we cannot consider that to be proper notice to NSCO in this case. Essentially, what NSC argues is that prior to the notice of appeal being filed with the Board of Tax Appeals, that is when the matter was still pending at the Board of Revision, it became a party to these proceedings by operation of law. This court has ruled in Columbus Apartments that an owner is an indispensable party in valuation proceedings and is always a party to valuation proceedings, even if it has not filed a complaint on its own. In this particular case, because the notice was not sent to the Board of Revision, under 5715.20, the appeal time had not yet begun to run, which means that jurisdiction still vested at the Board of Revision at the time NSCO purchased the property and became an owner. Now, as we said, unfortunately, because NSCO was not aware and could not be aware that the matter was still pending at the BOR, it did not have an opportunity to enter an appearance at those proceedings and ask that a copy of the decision be forwarded to it. Be that as it may, it is nevertheless a party. And also the fact that once we do file on appeal to the Board of Tax Appeals, it is still the BOR proceedings that are at issue, and which makes this owner a proper party in those proceedings, and therefore should have received notice of the from the Board of Revision of the pending action at the Board of Tax Appeals. I guess the only other thing, Your Honor, is that, again, we talked about the fact that the decision was, in our opinion, never properly addressed to us. And if one concern we do have is if that the BOE is correct and that sending a notice to an escrow agent is enough to satisfy notice, then we create a great problem for every single taxpayer in this state who has a mortgage and relies upon an escrow agent. Simply put, if we send notices to the escrow agent, property owner could receive an increased tax bill without ever being aware that any type of proceeding has been filed against it because notice requirements have been satisfied simply by the receipt by the escrow agent. And I don't think that what we want to do is create that situation for the taxpayers in the state, nor do we want to create that kind of liability for the thousands of escrow agents that work in the state. Unless the court has any other questions, we will conclude and reserve our time for rebuttal.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Smishek. Ms. Allison.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Kim Allison. I am with the Rich and Gillis Law Group, and I am here this morning on behalf of the Grove Board of Education of the Groveport-Madison Local School District. Before addressing the arguments made by the property owner in this case, I would like to address the jurisdictional issue involved herein. Because NSCO's motion to vacate was filed with the Board of Tax Appeals well outside the 30-day appeal period, the Board of Tax Appeals lacked jurisdiction to consider the motion to vacate. As you heard, on May 22, 2012, the Board of Tax Appeals issued its decision in this case, reversing the Board of Revision and reinstating the auditor's value. On May 22nd, the BTA properly certified this decision to all parties and to NSCO, the party in whose name the property was listed at the time the decision was issued. On August 5th, 2014, 805 days after the Board of Tax Appeals issued its decision in this case, NSCO filed its motion to vacate with the Board of Tax Appeals.
Let me ask you this. At the time that the Board of Education filed its appeal at the BTA, which was sometime in 2011.
Yes.
The NSCO was the owner of the property
at
that time.
It was. And we named NSCO.
Okay. Well, that's
okay. We named NSCO on our notice of appeal. We sent them a letter informing them that we intended to waive hearing and to submit a brief, and we sent them a copy of our brief.
What address did you?
We sent it to the tax mailing address. And contrary to counsel's assertion, there is case law. You know, the Knickerbocker property and the In Re Disciplinary Council of Taylor, this court stated that designating a tax mailing address is to furnish county officials and the public with the designated address to which notice of tax assessments and other related filings should be sent. I mean, the tax mailing address is prominently displayed on the property record card. It's an address that's picked by the property owner. So it's our opinion that this address is clearly sufficient to be reasonably calculated to serve notice.
And so you're saying that the Board of Education, what about the filing of the notice of appeal? Did the Board of Education send a copy of the notice of appeal to the BTA to NSCO?
They did not. At the time the notice of appeal is filed, it's the Board of Revision's responsibility. And under 57,
on the other hand,
yes.
This was an unusual situation.
It was. But regardless of the fact that we didn't send them a copy of our notice of appeal, we did send them a copy of our brief. We sent them a letter. They were properly served. At that point in time, they could have filed a motion to reopen the discovery, a motion to intervene. They had plenty of opportunity to join in the proceedings, but did not.
Now, let me ask you another question, and this issue may not be presented in this case,
sure.
But there's a long lapse of time,
yes,
between the BOR decision in 07 and the Board of Education's appeal.
Yes.
Now, your position is that the time for appealing to the BTA did not begin to run.
Because we were a party to the Board of Revision proceedings and were not notified. Correct. Under 57-1520.
But isn't there any outer limit? I mean, what if 10 years pass? What if 20 years pass?
You know,
isn't there a requirement of a reasonable amount of time?
And I understand the question. Unfortunately, there's just no statutory provision. I think counsel's right. This is probably an unusual situation that we'll probably never see again. But, you know, it's through no fault of its own. The Board of Education was just never notified. When we were going through our files, we said, hey, this case is still out there. What's going on? And it was a result of the Board of Revision's failure to notify us.
Well, but over, one can posit that over the course of time, the Board of Education might check on the docket in its various cases to see what the status of those cases were.
I can tell you with the number of cases that are handled, we do attempt to do that, of course. And in this case, you know, for whatever reason, we just assumed that the Board of Revision was going to perform its statutory duty and notify us because they always have in the past. So, and it is their duty to notify us.
Was there some specific event that gave the Board of Education notice that this had occurred?
I think it's exactly what you said. I think we were going through our files and said, wow, this is a long time for this case to be pending.
Okay.
Let's figure out. We reached out to the Board of Revision. They informed us that a decision had been rendered, and they emailed us.
And then immediately an appeal was pursued.
Yes, okay. Yes. Okay, so As this court has recognized under National Tube Company and 1495 Yeager, the BTA has control over its decisions until the actual institution of appeal or the expiration for the time for appeal has run. NSCO complains that a copy of the Board of Tax Appeals journal entry should have been sent to NSCO at its business address. However, there's nothing in the statute that requires this. It's just an address that is reasonably calculated to provide notice. Okay, so because the Board of Tax Appeals lost jurisdiction to vacate its May 22nd decision, 2012 decision on June 21st, 2012, and NSCO did not file its motion to vacate with the Board of Tax Appeals until August 5th, 2014, the Board of Tax Appeals clearly lacked jurisdiction to consider the motion to vacate, and this case should be remanded to the Board of Tax Appeals with instructions to dismiss. Okay, so if the court determines that the Board of Tax Appeals did have jurisdiction to consider NSCO's motion to vacate, the BTA decision denying the motion to vacate was both reasonable and lawful. Contrary to counsel's assertions, actual notice is not required. Neither the BOR nor the county auditor is statutorily required to notify a new property owner who acquired title to the property after the Board of Revisions decision was issued to the BTA, of the appeal to the BTA. Under 5717.01, upon receipt of the notice of appeal, the Board of Tax Appeals shall, by certified mail, notify all persons who were parties to the proceedings before such Board of Revision. There is no statutory requirement that they notify new owners. Also, contrary to NSCO's assertions, neither the Board of Revision nor the county auditor are required to notify a new property owner who acquired title to the property after the BOR's decision was issued under Ohio law. In its brief, the property owner cites several different cases, but none of them are particularly applicable in here. Each case discusses the fundamental right of the property owner to participate in the proceedings.
But let me go back to something we were saying a minute ago.
Yes.
In terms of the BTA's duties to send its decision.
Right.
Under 5717.03.
Yes.
Is the relevant statute there.
Yes.
Doesn't that statute require the BTA to send a notice of its decision to the parties and to the person in whose name the property is listed?
It does. Yeah, I was speaking of 5717.01 and the duty of the Board of Revision to notify of the notice of appeal. But you're absolutely right.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, they do. And they did in this case.
And that and that then resolves to the issue of whether or not that tax mailing address, or at least partly resolves to the issue of whether the tax mailing address was an appropriate address.
That's right. That's right. So they've challenged, the property owner has challenged that on three grounds, on statutory grounds, constitutional grounds, and case law. But the bottom line, you know, this is a case of notice, and notice was, in fact, sent in this case. All notifications were sent to the address designated by NSCO as its tax mailing address. If NSCO was denied the opportunity to participate in these proceedings, it was not due to the failure of the Board of Tax Appeals or the Board of Revision to properly notify NSCO, but rather by the failure of the party located at NSCO's tax mailing address to forward the information. NSCO also makes a due process claim in this case, but as we've already stated, the constitutional due process only requires that service is made in a manner that is reasonably calculated to serve notice. One final thing I would like to discuss is that NSCO did attach certain documents to its motion to vacate at the Board of Tax Appeals. These documents are clearly hearsay and should be stricken from the record herein. In their brief, the property owner relies on the case of Plain Local Schools, claiming that because the Board of Education failed to object to the documents, that somehow they become evidence. But you know, the standard is that documents have to be submitted in an evidentiary hearing in order to become evidence. Just submitting them to a document, that an untimely filed document, does not make them admissible into the record. Based on the foregoing, the Board of Education respectfully requests this court to remand the case to the Board of Tax Appeals with instructions to vacate its December 16th, 2014 order and to dismiss NSCO's motion to vacate, or in the alternative, The Board of Education respectfully requests this court to affirm the decision of the Board of Tax Appeals denying NSCA's motion to vacate. With that, if you have any questions, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Allison. Mr. Smieszek, you have 6 minutes.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
First, let me address the arguments raised by the Board of Education regarding notice of the BTA decision back in 2012. We have already established through our briefing and through oral testimony that notice to the escrow agent, in our opinion, is not sufficient. In addition, we would argue that there is no block to our filing the motion to vacate because the decision of the Board of Tax Appeals was a nullity. It was a nullity because notice was never given to NSCO at the beginning of the proceedings. Therefore, jurisdiction was never established. And second, it is a nullity because the appeal is actually still pending at the Board of Revision, the Board of Revision still having failed to certify, by certified mail, a copy of its decision to the Board of Education. I would note that under both the Warren County line of cases and under MB Westchester, similar arguments were made that the Board of Education in that case filed motions to vacate after 30 days and claimed that it could do so again because the decision of the Board of Tax Appeals was a nullity due to jurisdictional deficiency.
Well, as I was discussing with counsel a moment ago, this issue of whether the tax mailing address is an appropriate address is extremely significant here. Is it dispositive, or are you saying that's not a dispositive issue?
I'm saying that in our opinion, the tax mailing address is not dispositive
because
it's not sufficient. Because, well,
lack of jurisdiction
early on failed to invest the Board of Tax Appeals with jurisdiction in this issue at all.
Okay, but the propriety of the tax mailing address does, though, still potentially affect the jurisdiction of this court in this proceeding to address those other earlier jurisdictional issues, doesn't it? That's a threshold for this court to take action as to this matter. Because action should have been taken within 30 days of the giving of the notice of the BTA's decision. Or of the BTA's decision when
notice was given. Of the BTA's decision. Again, our position is, one, obviously, that the notice to the escrow agent is not sufficient. And two, because jurisdiction never vested in the Board of Tax Appeals, it's not a block for this court to ultimately make a determination in this case. The second issue, and Your Honor raised 5717.03b, which requires the Board of Tax Appeals to send a copy of its decision to a new property owner, even if that property owner did not participate before the BTA. And we would simply note that in cases in which subsequent appeals were filed to this board, to this court has said that naming that new owner as a party is a necessary thing and has dismissed cases. It would be an interesting situation if the notice requirements to file with this court were somehow far in excess of the notice requirements for filing an appeal with the Board of Tax Appeals. It would seem to us that they should be equal on both ends so that notice can be given at the earliest possible moment. Everyone has a possibility to participate. Finally, as to the documents attached to the motion to vacate, again, it was within the discretion of the Board of Tax Appeals to accept those documents. It could have excluded them. It did not. The Board of Education had an opportunity to file a motion, a memorandum contra to our motion. It could have raised that issue there. It did not. So we believe that not only did the BTA, within its discretion, properly include those, but that the Board of Education has waived any objection that it could have. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Smieszek. This case will be submitted, and the court will advise the parties of its decision.